Prestonsburg. I know we couldn't make it out last week. We got quite a bit of snow, but thankfully yesterday the sun came out and we're able to see the patches of grass for the first time since 1st of December. So it's kind of good after a while to get away from the white scene. On the information table, there's some letters. There's quite a few letters over there. If you haven't read them, you might want to read them. There's a couple from Mr. Smith sent, and also one from Darius McNeely, who's on the Council of Elders. It was encouraging to. We watched the little video, the transcripts on that letter yesterday, and it was pretty encouraging. Next Sabbath, January 8th, services will begin at the usual time here at 11 o'clock. That's the only announcement that Mr. Smith sent. I think they're leaving on their vacation. When is it, tonight? Tomorrow night, okay. They're going on their 35th anniversary cruise, I think. He said they scheduled it 6 months ago. This wouldn't have been time he would have scheduled if he knew what all was going on at this time. Who can forget 9/11? It seems like we can't forget it even if we wanted to. You know, we're reminded every year of this event with hours and hours of replay and replay. It's a replay of the hijacked jetliners were flown into the 210-story structures on September 11, 2001, and they burst into flames. And within 2 hours, the World Trade Center's twin towers collapsed like an accordion. It left behind a pile of twisted steel and concrete and dust. These images are probably burned into our minds. And as this year, as I watched these things, the replay of these things, it made me wonder, why did they show the destruction of these buildings over and over again? It seems that a portion of our human nature is fascinated with the destruction of things. Why is it seems like we're more fascinated with the tearing down of things than the building up? You know, it took almost a decade to build those buildings. The labor of many creative minds working long hours in building up those buildings. So what did it take to tear down those buildings? It took less than a dozen men, not using creative skills, but the destructive mindset of the God of this world. And with what tools did they use? A few box cutters placed at the throats of an airline crew. How long did it take to destroy the World Trade Center? You know, not long, just minutes. And as I looked through the channels this year on 9/11 to see if I could find a program about the building up rather than tearing down, I was curious to see if any progress was being made on the building up of what was destroyed almost 10 years ago. I found much on the tearing down, but very little on the building up. I didn't even find anything on the TV, but I did find some information on the Internet. By May of this year, the Port Authority started building on the new building close to one floor per week. And throughout the month of October this year, the building continued to rise. And it became part of the New York skyline this year, reaching 44 stories by the last month of October. And the World Trade Center should reach 55 stories by the end of this year. That would be right now. And the completion of this new building, 776-foot building, is expected sometime in the year 2013. And one of the proposed names of this new building, which is, I said, 776 feet tall, is the Freedom Tower. And the 1,776-foot height is symbolic of when America achieved freedom or independence in the year 1776. And it seemed like there should be more interest in the victory, the building up, the construction, than the defeat, the tearing down, the destruction. It seems certainly true that the human mind tuned into the God of this world is more concerned with the tearing down than building up. You know, it took years and years of hard work to build this building. It took a lot of time. It took a lot of effort. It takes that to build something great. Isn't it sad that all this can be destroyed in just a few minutes, so quickly and easily? Brethren, there is another building that is being built that we need to be even more concerned about. This building has been under construction for several thousands of years. Work began in A.D. 31, and that building is still incomplete. And this, what I'm talking about, is a spiritual building. Jesus Christ is the cornerstone. The apostles and the prophets make up the foundation. And that building is the church of God. So what is our role in this spiritual building? Are we following our Creator and doing things to build it up? Or sometimes we do things to tear it down and destroy the spiritual building like the hijackers did? Maybe doing things without realizing can do it harm. Today I'd like to address a topic, a tool that Satan can use to tear down rather than to build up. And it has to do with a subject that all of us at one time in our lives, or maybe more frequently than we desire, that we're going to encounter. You know, whether we're in the workplace, whether we're in school, high school, grade school, at work, just generally dealing with people. And unfortunately, sometimes it even invades the church of God. Let's turn to James chapter 1. Here in James chapter 1, we find a tool that Satan uses to try to tear down. James chapter 1, verse 26. James 1:26. In James chapter 1:26, if anyone among you thinks he is religious and does not bridle his tongue but deceives his own heart, this one's religion is useless. You know, it's like the tool the hijacker used. The box cutter was designed to be used for good. But notice here in verse 26, the one who does not control or bridle the tongue, it can be used for tearing down, for destruction. You know, for the tearing down, the tongue can be used for gossip, backbiting. And sadly, within the church, sometimes it can be used in another destructive manner, and that is to sow discord among the brethren. You know, we live in a world where we're told in the book of Revelation, in the 12th chapter, that Satan is the accuser of the brethren. And he's accusing us day and night before God's throne. You know, why does he do that? Does he have a reason? Well, you know, our human nature is frail. And oftentimes our spirit is willing, but we all stumble and make mistakes. We will all falter from time to time. And there's not one of us who may not have fallen prey to this problem of gossiping, either as a victim, or maybe we've experienced it as an observer, or unfortunately, we may have been a participant in this particular element. I remember years ago hearing that the pastor of the church that I was attending, that he was having a problem with alcohol. Someone driving down the street had seen him leaving a bar. And coming out of the bar in the middle of the day, they saw him stumbling. And after stumbling around, he got in his car and drove off. And after this story had circulated around the church for a while and done its damage, the pastor finally heard about it, and he was able to give the true explanation of what had happened. The truth was, the pastor had gone to visit a prospective member at the bar. The prospective member happened to be the bartender at the bar. And he was getting a lot of grief at home about the church, so he wanted to meet the minister during a break at work. And after visiting with the prospective member during the break, the pastor left the bar. He walked back out into the bright sunlight and stumbled, trying to adjust his eyes to the bright light. At that very time, the person who perpetuated this story about the pastor having problems with alcohol happened to drive by. You know, had this person followed the Bible instruction of taking the matter to the person involved in the first place, rather than making up his own or their own scenario and spreading the gossip around the church, you know, doing this behind the back of the pastor, he's totally unaware of it. You know, much of the grief of this situation could have been avoided. In Matthew 12, we're told to be very much aware of what we say. We're told there we're going to be evaluated on what we say. Matthew 12:34. Matthew chapter 12, verse 34. Brood of vipers, how can you, being evil, speak good things? For out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks. A good man out of the good treasure of his heart brings forth good things. An evil man out of the evil treasure brings forth evil things. But I say to you that for every idle word men may speak, they will give account of in the day of judgment. For by your words you will be justified, and by your words you will be condemned. You know, it says here, by every idle word that is spoken. And that actually, that's where gossip and backbiting come in. You know, if we live in this world, we're going to face that. You know, either we've had people go behind our backs and say things about us, or maybe people have gossiped and given lies or misrepresentation. I read this story about these four preachers who were in a boat far from land. And during the conversation, one of the ministers or one of the preachers said, you know, our people come into us and pour out their hearts to us and tell us all their problems and their sins and needs. So I think it'd be appropriate that we as pastors do the same thing. You know, confession is good for the soul. In due time, all four of these men agreed to do that. And finally, one asked another, what's something that you have a problem with? The first one said, well, you know, I do have a problem with alcohol. I like to take the bottle sometime. And the second confessed to liking to smoke cigars. And the third confessed to liking to gamble. When it came to the fourth one, he said he just could not confess. And they kept pressuring him and asking him and saying, come on now, it's not fair that we confessed our faults and here you sit here and don't confess yours. What is your secret or vice? And finally he answered and he said, gossip, and I can't wait to get back to shore. You know, when you think about gossip, that's the way of this world. You know, that's the world we live in. You know, half the publications that we see in the various stores, maybe we go to the supermarket or the shopping centers. If you haven't done that, notice the headlines on some of those tabloids there sometimes. It's rather amusing. And oftentimes, we wonder who is worse, those who write the stuff or those who read it. We know that they're just marketing evil, marketing gossip to sell products. You know, at times it might be laughable. But we have to realize that gossip has become a way of this life and this society, this world. And we're told to come out of her, my people, and be aware of what's going on around us. In this subject of gossip, for example, we cannot find that word gossip in the Bible per se, but the principles of gossiping are there. Gossip is malicious or idle talk. And I've seen the definition of gossip. A gossip has been defined as someone who talks to you about others. A bore is someone who talks to you about yourself, about himself. And a brilliant conversationist is one who talks about yourself. You know, we've all seen it, and we can laugh at it, maybe in those tabloid supermarkets, supermarket tabloids. But it's not a laughable matter when we're on the receiving end of that. And God does give us some strong reprimands in His Word. You know, gossip is usually about the affairs of other people. And it seems for most it happens that we can't find something better to do with our time. And that's when people get caught up in it. Saying things, talking about people, and that's when we get in trouble. You know, it's usually degrading, belittling, putting a person down. And you know, this is something Jesus Christ forbids us to do. We're not to belittle or put others down, but to view as all as God does with mercy. He tells us that we who are without sin cast the first stone. Now, this subject of backbiting is a little bit different than gossip. Backbiting is gossip that goes a little bit deeper, a little bit more poisonous in its relationship. It makes a verbal attack on someone, some individual behind their backs when they're not there to defend themselves, not confronting them directly. And that's what makes it bad. Because usually, if that person was there, he could probably straighten out the situation, give an explanation of what's going on. But sometimes people don't know it's happening, it's going on. They don't know what, you know, that it's being done. And generally speaking, it's more malicious and has more of an evil intent behind it. There's usually an agenda behind the gossip, a hidden motive. And usually it indicates a vendetta that a person has regarding individuals they're doing it to. Or it could represent a private warfare or a feud that's going on. The bottom line is this. Jesus taught us that our mouths merely reflect what's in our hearts. Out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks. So when we run into people who start this process of either gossiping or backbiting, or if we read it on the internet, we know immediately that is a no-no from God's point of view. There's something we want to stay clear of, like the plague. Because if we partake in that, it can eventually destroy us also and cause tremendous damage to others. You know, if you have access to the internet, we probably realize how bad things can get in these public forums and discussion groups. And they're a good place to stay clear of. And you know, God gets upset with this type of attitude. Let's look at Timothy chapter 3. In Timothy chapter 3, in Timothy chapter 3, we find prophecies of these attitudes getting worse and worse in the end time. Timothy chapter 3, verse 1. Timothy chapter, Second Timothy chapter 3, verse 1. 2 Timothy 3, 1. But realize this, that in the last days, difficult times will come. It seems like that statement is more than true. Verse 2. For men will be lovers of self, lovers of money. You know, people will do anything, will do anything for money, whatever it takes. You know, they'll beat a person down, they'll belittle them, stab them in the back so they can get a monetary reward or a promotion, maybe an elevation in status of some kind. Maybe it's an ego problem. They want to be in charge. And they get there by putting other people down. Continuing in verse 2, they will be boastful, they will be arrogant, revelers, disobedient to parents, ungrateful, unholy. Note verse 3, unloving, irreconcilable, and malicious gossips. Notice what it says. It says malicious gossips. You know, it's amazing. It seems that human nature always wants to believe the worst and be very skeptical of the best. There's an old saying that states some people will believe anything if it's whispered to them. Sadly, it seems that is true. In verse 3, he's stating, in other words, that these people, they will be instruments in Satan's hands to feed the very thing that Satan likes to do. to accuse other individuals. He goes on to say, and without self-control, brutal, and haters of good. Now it's important to understand that, that this is something that is very destructive. It's like a terrorist wanting to tear down rather than to build up. And it can be a tool to create damage within a spiritual building, the church. In Proverbs 6, we find a statement of how God views things when he looks at human beings. Here we find some things that God tells us not to do in Proverbs 6 and beginning in verse 16. Proverbs 6 and verse 16. In Proverbs 6, verse 16, these six things does the Lord hate. You know, we know that God is a God of love, but when it comes to these things, he says, I hate these things. I don't want these things to be a part of my sons and my daughters. These are not to be a part of our character, you know, not to be a part of our being. And he goes on to say, and give these things that are not to be a part of us. He says, I hate these things, and yes, seven is an abomination to him. The seventh one is an abomination to him, meaning it's totally detestable to him. So look, and he goes on, verse 17, a proud look, a lying tongue, a hand that sheds innocent blood. Verse 18, a heart that devises wicked imaginations, feet that are swift in running to mischief. You know, how many of us have noticed this? You know, it's not hard to spot these things in our society today. In verse 19, it seems like these things are, you know, getting worse and worse all around us. Verse 19, a false witness that speaks lies. And number seven is, he that sows discord among the brethren. You know, God hates all these seven things on this list. But the one that stands out, the one that is an abomination to him, is he that sows discord among the brethren. You know, I bet if you were to take a survey of people in this society, very few would probably pick this as the worst one of the seven. Most would say, you know, those who shed innocent blood, that's a lot worse than sowing discord. But you know, God's thinking is different. He hates all of these, but the one that stands out to him, he that sows discord among the brethren. And if we were to meditate on these seven things, really think about them, we'll come to realize that sowing discord among the brethren can lead to or be involved in all the other six things listed. Think about someone who deliberately sows discord. We can probably imagine a certain amount of pride in that individual, a proud look, which is the first one that he hates. It's the first one listed, a proud look. Looking down on others. You know, usually sowing discord involves sin and lies. That's the second one listed. Thank you. You know, usually sowing discord involves lies. That's the second one listed. And sowing discord can certainly end in shedding innocent blood, and certainly shedding spiritual innocent blood, which is third on our list. Offending the little ones in Christ, maybe causing spiritual casualties. Sowing discord could certainly include a heart that devises wicked imaginations, all kinds of plots, agendas, things behind the scene, feet that are swift to run to mischief. You know, it seems that those who sow discord can't wait to spread their wicked imaginations around. And so we can understand why God looks upon sowing discord as an abomination, because it usually involves the other six things that he lists here as what he hates. And this time, God is working on a very important building, a very important building project. You know, it's not a skyscraper on the New York skyline, but he's building a spiritual building, his church. And he knows that sowing discord is something that can disrupt the building process. And it's an abomination to him when this building process is disrupted. Because, brethren, the church is a part of the family process in God's eyes. God is the father. The church is the mother. The church is a safe haven, a place where it is stated in Psalms 133, how beautiful it is for brethren to dwell together in unity. Brothers and sisters dwelling together in unity within the church. A safe place where the Father can place a new babe in Christ. And He doesn't want anyone messing with that environment. By sowing discord among the brethren, offending those babes God has placed within His church, for He talks about this being very serious in His mind in another place in the book of Mark. Mark chapter 9, verse 42. But whoever causes one of these little ones who believe in me to stumble, it would be better for him if a millstone were hung around his neck and he were thrown into the sea. You know, actually imagine yourself being in that situation, having a heavy millstone hung around your neck and being dropped into the sea. To me, that would be very, very terrifying. And God wants us to realize the seriousness of sowing discord is something God doesn't want us to be messing around with. And that's why God is very upset. You know, He wants peace. He wants harmony among His people. He does not want this stabbing, backbiting, and whispering, and things of that nature. Because, you know, brethren, that's what goes on in this world, Satan's world. And God knows this idea of discord is against his nature. It interferes with our relationship with God. And He doesn't want anything that interferes with that relationship with Him. You know, that sows discord in that relationship with Him. And He doesn't want anything that sows discord in our relationship with each other. He doesn't want anything to sow discord. He doesn't want that. He doesn't want to hinder the building process of the church, the spiritual temple. And that's very important because, again, we are all in a team effort together. You know, what about the famous phrase we've heard? Sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will never hurt me. In our heart, we know that is not true, even though it may be a useful attitude to take when insulted by others. You know, reciting those words does not take the hurt away. Let's go to Proverbs chapter 18. Proverbs chapter 18, verse 8. I'll be reading out of the Authorized Version here. Proverbs 18:8. The words of a talebearer are as wounds as they go down into the innermost part of the belly. As they go down within our very innermost being, saying words do tremendous damage. So unless we've been a victim of maybe a violent crime or a major illness or something else, Anyway, our deepest pains have probably come from hurtful words. You know, words, we know that words have great power. Think about it. God created the world through words. He said, let there be light, and there was light. And humans also use words in producing great novels and move us and, you know, writing music that maybe warms our heart or our emotions. And writers put much thought into the right selection of words in their books and songs. And we listen and communicate with words every day that either lifts us up or maybe brings us down. Powerful, positive words can bring great healing. But negative words also, on the other hand, can have much destructive power. So whenever we talk negatively about other people or listen to something, someone else talk negatively about others, we unleash that harmful power. So how do we use the power of words with others? Do our words lift up and inspire, or do they destroy? Are they words of truth, or do we disclose the truth in a hurtful way? You know, if someone paid us 10 cents for every kind word we said about people, and they collected 5 cents for every unkind word, would we be rich or would we be poor? You know, we realize that gossip and slander maybe can ruin reputations, it can ruin families, it can break up marriages, separate friends, destroy communities, and yes, even divide churches. And knowing that gossip is so destructive, why do we do it? Why do we gossip? You know, we often gossip to feel good about ourselves. We get an ego boost maybe from others' sins and others' mistakes. The gossip makes us feel superior to that person we're talking about. Let's look at 2 Corinthians 10. You know, maybe we've all experienced this, maybe at the workplace, where people put others down so that they can maybe move up the ladder to success. 2 Corinthians 10, verse 12. For we dare not class ourselves or compare ourselves with those who commend themselves. But they measuring themselves by themselves and comparing themselves among themselves are not wise. But he who glories, let him glory in the Lord. For not he who commends himself is approved, but whom the Lord commends. You know, when we get in this area of comparing ourselves and saying that maybe, you know, we could do a better job than someone else, we're turning our human nature as being tuned into the author of this. We're playing in the hands of Satan. You know, he is an expert. Satan is an expert at this. Let's look at Isaiah 14. In Isaiah chapter 14, beginning in verse 12. This is about Lucifer at this point, before he became Satan. Well, as he's becoming Satan, I guess. Verse 12, how you are falling from heaven, O Lucifer, son of the morning. How you are cut down to the ground, you have weakened the nations. Notice in verse 13, for you have said in your heart, I will ascend into heaven, I will exalt my throne above the stars of God. I will sit on the mount of the congregation on the further sides of the north. I will ascend above the heights of the clouds. I will be like the Most High. We read here of Lucifer's rebellion against God. You know, it's because of envy and jealousy of God's authority and God's position. He wanted to take over God's position. And it was probably through lies and deception he was able to convince one-third of the angels that he was right and God was wrong. And he rose up with them in a rebellion against God himself. And when we start comparing ourselves among ourselves, we can fall into that same trap. And you know, Satan, along with our human nature, along with our ego, our vanity, is more than glad to help us along that path. Maybe our ego or vanity leads to believe us that we can do a better job than someone who's in position, maybe in the work or office or in the church, to compare ourselves with someone in that office. You know, it could be someone on the council of elders, it could be the pastor, it could be the deacon, someone in charge of special music, maybe a teacher in a youth class. If we want to do this, Satan already has a game plan. He has a playbook for us to follow. And step one in that Satan's playbook is compare ourselves with that person. Become convinced that we are right and they are wrong. Step number two, try to convince others to join our righteous cause, sharing those alleged faults with other people. Step number three, warfare. A war of words against that person. And at the same time, not really caring whether we're destroying or tearing down. Exactly the same steps that Satan followed in rebelling against God. But God doesn't want us to follow that plan of Satan. If there is a problem, he has given us a procedure to follow. And it's not the game plan of Satan. And we'll get to that a little bit later. You know, it seems that our human nature finds there's an excitement that comes from gossip. Because it's human nature to want to hear dirt on someone else or on others and repeat it. You know, again, look at all those tabloids and things they sell. They're bound to be able to sell some of those. You know, they're filled with all this dirt about the rich and the famous. Now, in Proverbs 16, we see something. Proverbs 16, verse 27. Proverbs 16, verse 27. Here in Proverbs 16, verse 27, it says, "An ungodly man digs up evil." And you know, we have those go around digging up the past. They're looking for something to make an issue over something. And God states in verse 27 that it is an ungodly man who does this. It's been stating that it's exciting and fun to read and listen to gossip about others. It's fun until it's about us. Pain comes when we're on the receiving end of that gossip. It's very frustrating. You know, it's very frustrating trying to defend yourself when you don't even know where some of these things originate to try to track it down. There's a story about President Reagan's first labor secretary, Raymond Donovan. He resigned from his post after numerous rumors went out that he had done wrong. And after spending more than $1 million to defend himself in legal fees, Donovan was cleared of all those charges. And coming out of the courtroom, and he started talking to the reporters, he asked, "Where do I get my reputation back?" But we also find that gossip hurts the gossiper. You know, when we speak evil about someone else, because words once uttered, they're almost impossible to be recalled. And if one who gossips repents of that sin, it makes it more difficult to become reconciled. Because the words once said, they're very hard to take back. And sowing discord not only causes pain, but also strife, and it causes a lack of unity, tearing the building down rather than building up. Proverbs 26. In Proverbs 26, we're reminded here that tale-bearing is the cause of strife among brethren. Proverbs 26, verse 20. In verse 20 it says, "Where there is no wood, the fire goes out. So where there is no talebearer, the strife ceases." We all know that if we don't have any fuel for the fire, it'll go out. Same way, no talebearer, strife ceases. Verse 21, "As coals are to burning coals," he says, "and wood to fire, so is the contentious man to kindle strife." You know, God does not want any type of strife brought to bear in the area, in this area, amongst the brethren. He wants peace in His church. And that's why He says it's good and pleasant when brethren dwell together in unity. You know, it is truly a joy to be able to come to church on the Sabbath away from the strife and the turmoil in this society. But, you know, if we sow discord, it destroys the peace, and the church becomes like the society. And sowing discord also brings about the emotion of guilt, emotion we feel, we know in our hearts, that's wrong to slander and talk about someone behind his back. You know, have we ever tried to look someone in the eye after you talked about them? I mentioned before that God gives us a way to solve these contentions, these offenses, rather than gossip about it to others. And guilt comes about when we don't follow God's way of doing things, when we don't follow God's instruction. And that biblical principle is given in Matthew 18. Matthew chapter 18. Matthew chapter 18, verse 15. "If your brother sins against you, go and tell him his fault between you and him alone. If he hears you, you have gained a brother." But you know, what if someone is plotting against us? They got a hidden agenda trying to do us harm. Gossiping, backbiting, telling lies about us as an individual. What should we do? I had this story about this lady named Mildred. She was in a church in this particular denomination. She was known as the church gossip. She was a self-appointed monitor of the church's moral, and she kept sticking her nose into other people's business. Although most people did not approve of all this gossiping and this extracurricular activity that she was doing, her gossiping, but at the same time, they feared her because they were afraid that she might say something about them. So they maintained her silence. But she made a mistake one time when she accused George. George was a new member in this particular church, and she accused him of being an alcoholic. After she saw his old pickup truck parked in front of the town's only bar one afternoon. And the gossip eventually got back to George. And George was a man of few words. Instead of fighting back and defending himself, he just stared for a moment at all the church members and just turned around and walked away. And he didn't try to explain, defend, or deny. He said nothing. And later that evening, George quietly parked his pickup truck in Mildred's driveway, and he walked home and left it there all night. You know, to George's credit, he didn't get into a war of words. The answer to the question, what should we do? We need to be careful. We need to be careful how we respond. You know, the temptation is to fly back in the same direction and to attack. And that's a human weakness in the flesh, and Satan knows that. And we're told in the Scriptures that we have examples like Daniel. Daniel, who was attacked by all of his peers back in that day. They were jealous of him, of his position. So they began to concoct all kinds of stories about him. But they really could not find fault. They couldn't nail him down. You know, they had done anything wrong. So when he learned about the plan and the plot to overthrow him, the first thing he did, he ran to God. You know, he went to God in prayer. And brethren, that's what we should do. If we ever find ourselves in this type of situation, God will fight that battle for us. He will deliver us from our enemies. You know, he promised to do that. God says, vengeance is his, or vengeance is mine, him saying it. He tells us he will repay, no matter how hurtful it is, he will take care of it. He sees what they're doing to us. He knows what's going down. People may not think that he's aware of what's going on maybe in our lives, but he does keep accurate records. And he knows, and God knows what to do. And he will do that when the time is right. You know, gossip may be exciting for a moment, but then it'll only produce hurt, guilt, and pain. So how can we avoid gossip? How can we avoid gossip? Number one, seek a repentant and clean heart from God. You know, if we do this, we will be close to God. We will be on the same wavelength as God. You know, we're told in James 4, if we draw near to God, God will draw near to us, and Satan will flee from us. You know, by drawing near to God, Satan will not have that influence on us. And we'll have the power to resist talking negatively about others. Number two, it may be better to cover a matter than repeat it. It may be better to cover a matter than repeat it. Proverbs chapter 17. 17 verse 9. Proverbs 17:9. He that covers a transgression seeks love, but he that repeats a matter separates very, very friends. You know, friendships can be broken and easily damaged if an individual doesn't take this into consideration. And we must not repeat certain things. We need to realize there's no advantage maybe in repeating something to someone else. We need to ask a question, is there really any purpose in repeating this? Number three, pray for those we may have hurt. Pray for those we may have hurt. You know, those we may have hurt either purposely by our words or inadvertently by speaking negatively about them. Ask God to heal them. You know, this can be very important for us too. You know, when we pray, and I don't know if you noticed this, but when we pray about that other person, you know, we take ownership of something. It helps in the process of repentance if we're able to pray for that person. It makes us more apt not to repeat the same mistake again. Number four, when confronted with these situations, ask God, give us wisdom. Ask God to give us wisdom. James chapter 1. This is a promise here in verse 5. Promise from God of James chapter 1 verse 5. If any of you lacks wisdom, let him ask God, who gives to all liberally and without reproach, and it will be given to him. So we can ask God for this wisdom to help us to resist being pulled into negative conversations. And the bottom line is to ask God wisdom to do the right thing in this situation. Number five, realize by sowing discord and gossip, we're on very dangerous ground with God. We're on very dangerous ground with God. Usually, gossip shows that we have an unforgiving attitude. And God tells us, you know, if we're unwilling to forgive others, then He is unwilling to forgive us. And you know, brethren, that is a very bad position to be in if God is unwilling to forgive us. Let's look at 1 John 4. 1 John 4. I feel this is a very important scripture in dealing with this topic. Sometimes we may not even realize that these can be a warning. 1 John 4, verse 19. It says there, we love Him because He first loved us. Then verse 20, it says, if any man say, I love God and hates his brother, you know, speaks evil, backbites, spreads gossip, sows discord, God says, he's a liar. For he that loves not his brother whom he has seen, how can he love God whom he has not seen? And brethren, that is so true. That's hypocrisy, saying, I love God, and we turn around and just hate someone else and spit out things that are not right. Then we're on very dangerous ground with God. Number six. Respond to gossip or criticism with encouraging words about the person being talked about. In Ephesians 4:29, let no evil talk come out of your mouths, but only what is useful for building up, as there is need, so that your words may give grace to those who hear. Only what is useful for building up. Number seven, the last key is think. THINK, an acronym. THINK. Before speaking of any person or subject as controversial, T, is it true? T, is it true? Think. H, is it helpful? I, is it inspiring? Is it inspiring? N, is it necessary? N, is it necessary? And K, is it kind? If what we're about to say does not pass those tests, maybe we should keep our mouth shut. Finally, remember the little saying that tells us what kind of minds we have. It said, great minds discuss ideas. Average minds discuss events. Small minds discuss people. In conclusion, brethren, God gives us the key for incorporating these concepts. And He gives us the key in Philippians 4. In Philippians 4, where it is stated, finally, beloved, whatever is true, whatever is honorable, whatever is just, whatever is pleasing, whatever is commendable, if there is any excellence, if there is anything worthy of praise, think about these things. You know, by applying God's instruction, discourse, sowing discourse, can be stopped. Brethren, we have seen that one of the primary works of God and Christ for the past 2,000 years has been the building of His church. And let us all use the power of words, of our words, not to tear down, but to join Him in building up.